We can probably try and keep this to half an hour, I reckon.
Yeah, that's one of
That's
the
fine.
comments I got back from someone saying, "Hey guys, you're too long." I'm like, "No way.
Yeah.
We are so interesting." Until here it is. When you said, "Let's have a policy pod," I thought, "Oh boy, this is going to be something," because we are supposed to make dry things
Exciting.
exciting,
Yeah.
and I just could not see
Well,
a way of this happening.
the only way I can see it is like, it's where it's those the examples that we're giving, they've got to be a little bit juicy,
Well, okay, so let's talk policy.
Yeah.
James, what's on your mind?
Before we start, sorry, do you mind? I had a point in here. We give the EPA a pretty hard time, right? And some of the other regulators as well. Can I just include a comment in this pod where I just say why we do it? Like why constructive criticism is important?
It's a sport in our industry. Everybody does it. Come on,
Yeah.
this is where you go to an Alga trivia night, and all you do is bag counsels in the
Bag the
EPA. Come on,
regulator.
this is what we do.
That's true. Okay. So yeah, if you're happy, let's go through those three things and we can go through it
Okay.
that way.
Go. It's your part. No, go for it.
Okay, I'm taking the lead on this one. We don't have to do our funny intro. We haven't worked out our introduction yet, have we? We need our little jingle and our little the
Oh,
little bio. Yeah, all that good stuff.
yeah, that's all
So
right.
first, Gunnar, how are you?
I'm all right. Not that. Is that your type of intro that you're thinking of?
Yeah,
It's like,
how's it
good
going?
one, right? After you convinced me with lots and lots of messages that we need to have a
A
podcast
policy
about
pod.
policy, like, it's all yours. Go for it. I'll have some snarky comments though.
Good, please do. Yeah, just chime in. That'd be great. So I thought we'd kick off. There was some news this week about there's a bill that's been introduced to increase penalties under the POEO Act pretty significantly. Do you want to give a hot take on that one, Gunnar?
Yeah, you sent the message out in our in a chat,
Yeah.
and my immediate response was, "That's not what needs to happen. Really, higher penalties. Yeah, because there's nothing else we should attack in the POEO Act, as if that in any way made any difference." That's my take on this, right?
Yeah. I think it's fair. They haven't been increased since 2005, so I think there was some need, and I like a kind of step up in penalties for repeat offenders, which I think is a good addition. But I'm with you. It's like increasing penalties without doing anything else does seem a little bit short-sighted and a little bit heavy-handed, really.
Maybe explain to me what penalties are we talking about? Not how much, but what can you
Yeah.
get fined for?
They increase it for everything. So all the way from penalty notices, which are the, on the spot fines, all the way up to prosecutions, where, you can have the full fines under the Act. Like, so penalties were increased at all levels.
So if you are, I don't know, a mulch provider, and your mulch contains, let me think of something. Asbestos, for example, right? And you are found to provide asbestos impacted mulch. There is a penalty for that, right?
Yes, and it's
So these
much, you
kind of
can
penalties have been increased,
doubled. Yeah, doubled.
doubled. Okay.
Interesting hypothetical you gave there, Gunnar.
Do you think this is going to make any difference?
Look, I think the penalty notice increases may have some effect because, you've gone from 15K up to 30K for on the spot fine. A 30K on the spot fine is pretty sizable. And then you got 45K on the spot fine for a repeat offence. I actually think that will make some people sit up and take notice. Those on the spot fines are the things where EPA officers, have full discretion. They can rock up on a site, and if they see what they consider to be a breach, they can actually issue a fine on the spot. So they will actually get some people to take notice, I think. In terms of the prosecution amounts, I mean, it comes down to the court still, right? So it comes down to what penalties judges are allocating. I could be wrong here. I don't think there's ever been a prosecution where the sentence has actually been the full penalty available under the Act anyway. So
Yeah, okay. Look, as I said, there are other issues with the POEO Act
for sure.
that need to be addressed. And it's always easy to appear to do something as a politician, like, "Oh,
Yeah,
we are in
cracking
light of
down on criminals and
yes, and mobile phone use in the car, right? You lose you, it's I don't know, it's $700 or something insane for an offense where there is zero data available on what actually the harm is, right? I mean, look, I'm going on another rant here, but I, as part of the podcast with Phil Hibbs, where we were talking about, you know, how many deaths are there a year, I also looked into the mobile phone usage. There is no data available. There's zero data available that shows that mobile phone usage causes accidents. And even in hindsight, there's none available that this accident was caused by someone. Now, should we have incredibly harsh penalties for this kind of stuff? No.
Yeah.
No.
So
But
it's
hey.
not necessarily data driven.
No, it's not. And look, fair enough. So we have penalties increased. I wonder if the
Yeah.
Mouchgate has anything to do with this. What do you think?
Definitely it does. Like definitely it does. Whether it affects the outcome of that, I don't know. But the issue to people who run facilities and operate licensed sites and what have you is that without addressing all the issues that we have with the Act around clarifications and education and stuff like that, the ability for an officer to rock up on a site and give you a much bigger penalty is a pretty scary thing. There's some good,
Yes.
there's definitely a good element to that, but I think it has to come hand in hand with improved education, improved regulation, all that sort of stuff.
All right, good. So there's our housekeeping for the week.
Yeah.
Fine.
Well, I thought we could give a shout out to Erin, who
Yes.
contacted us. So
Yes.
we've had our first listener reach out to us, Gunnar. This is a pretty big deal.
It is. And you know what? The comments that Aaron left on our wherever it was. I'm not on social media. I have no idea.
On
Where
LinkedIn, I
was
think it
it?
was. It was an email. It was an email. So yeah, so Aaron Short flicked us a note on the recent judgment around the Barrow landfill, and he had some interesting questions that are more pitched towards the EPA. So maybe we can get a representative from the EPA one day, give us some insight into those questions that he had. But yeah, he was really interested in the outcome of the judgment there, and I guess the proportionality of the judgment and the penalty compared to the amount of money that would have been made from doing that. So it's a really interesting one, and we actually worked on that site, and I've got a long history with that site. So we thought we might actually do a pod with just the two of us kind of talking through that judgment and some of the issues around it.
Yeah, in short, Aaron said, hey, the operator was found guilty of having not declared 14,000 tons of asbestos waste in his landfill. And as a result of that, of course, he didn't have to pay about $2.3 million worth of waste levy, which applies to asbestos waste. But he was fined $260,000 plus the EPA's legal fees estimated to be $130,000. So, at a fine of just under $400,000 for saving 2.3 million, sounds like a good deal to me.
Yeah, exactly.
When I read that article, I didn't even think of that. But Aaron, well done. It sounds like something we need to talk about, and I hope
Yeah,
we
for
can get
sure.
someone from the EPA on that.
I think considering our involvement in that, we can probably give some good perspective on it as well. So that'll be an interesting one. So we'll do that soon. But
Yes.
thank you, Aaron, for reaching out to us. We really appreciate that, and it's good to know that we're not just yelling into the void. People are actually listening, which is great.
Yes. Yes, they are. By the way, has D listened to it yet? Because
She has.
my girls are staunchly refusing
Oh
to
wow,
listen to it.
gotta get him on board, mate. Yeah, no, she's listened now, which is really nice. Got me some good positive feedback. So,
A good one.
yeah.
Okay, main topic, policy questions and commentary with examples. All right,
Yes.
I have one. March last year, the EPA clarifies a sentence in the definition of venom, virgin excavated natural material. It's always been that venom must not contain any sulfidic
So,
ores.
yes.
I've always wondered, what does that mean? Okay, it doesn't contain any acid sulfate soils, fair enough. These acid sulfate soils, sulfidic ores, anyway. So it got clarified. Now the EPA in March 2023 published a clarification where they say, hey, sulfidic ores need to be determined in these and these tests, and these areas. It's not as clear as it sounds, but at least it was clarified. The problem that I have with this is the way it was done,
Yes.
because it was published on the EPA website, not on a web on a designated section where they say, "Hey, these are news, by the way." No, it was just a small paragraph snuck in to the existing website. That website has been there forever. And suddenly that website gets updated with 100 words, maybe. And you know what? Nowhere, other than when you go to the website, but there was no announcement. I found out about it completely accidentally by somebody else mentioning it to me. And I'm thinking, guys, come on, there has to be a better way of doing this.
For sure. And I mean, that's exactly what I wanted to talk about today. And I think this is a tough one to keep exciting and entertaining and all those things that we want to beak on. Now, this is a tough one to do it, but I'll do my best. That one actually isn't even quite as bad as some of the other examples that I'll give, because at least it was public. It certainly wasn't publicized, and it wasn't, put in front of the people that needed to see it, but at least it was on the website. I'll give them that. There are some other examples here that is completely private. And I guess for people who don't know my background, I have worked in public policy. I've been a regulator, so I've been in the shoes of the EPA, not in New South Wales government, but in the feds. So I get resource constraints. I get that doing public policy is hard, and it's hard work, but I'm a genuine believer that if you're going to do it, you need to do it the right way. And the other thing I was going to say that is that, you and I give the EPA a lot of a hard time, both privately and on this pod a little bit, and that will continue. But the reason that we do it, and the reason that I do it, is because I want the EPA to be as good as they possibly can be. A good EPA supports us, and it supports, all the outcomes that we're trying to get. So when I see the EPA not doing public policy properly, what it means is that it weakens them in situations where people have done the wrong thing. It gives people all sorts of angles to attack the EPA on process and lack of clarity around stuff, that it actually weakens them in what they're trying to do. So that's why I criticize the EPA from a place of trying to make sure they are as good as they possibly can be, and are constantly improving. A couple of
You sound like
examples.
Anthony Robbins here with his Awaken the Giant Within stuff.
Be as good as you can be.
Well, we're not talking, look, EPA is government, right? Government has a lot of handcuffs on.
Yes.
We know that. And I don't envy them at all. But when you make a decision that you update something, these days it's not that tough. I have subscribed to every email address and distribution list that there is because I want to hear about updates. I don't want to come across them. I
Yes.
want to be told. I don't know. It is not that difficult. I know what you're referring to, isn't it? You're referring to that presentation you came across that deals with lead contamination in waste coming from residential properties.
Exactly. And when we're talking about public policy, we're talking about basically the bottom rung of the hierarchy, right? Which is like basically clarifying stuff that's out there in the acts that needs to be defined or needs to be further explained, so that we, the people who actually have to implement this stuff, don't have to come to our own conclusions. We've got something there to give us guidance, right? So we're talking about guidelines, standards, all that sort of good stuff, right?
Let's go to that example, because so in the waste classification guidelines, these are the guidelines that are part of the infamous POAO Act. If you want to classify waste, where excess material needs to go and what kind of class it is, what landfill does it have to go to, that's the guidelines you refer to. In there is one sentence where they say waste originating from residential properties that is contaminated with lead is pre-classified in a certain class, it's general solid waste, regardless of the concentrations of lead in there, which is kind of a weird thing if you think about it, right? But hey,
So
fair enough.
it means you can have hazardous waste level lead, but if it's from a residential property, then it is automatically GSW. So it's downgraded to GSW.
General solid waste, yes.
Yes.
Okay, so that's what it says in there, and that is an it's a bit odd. I mean, I can see there are some reasons why this may be the case and why not. But here we go. So how did you come across a quite a good clarification about all this, by the way?
Well, the interesting thing is, like, you assume that logically you think, well, that probably applies to lead paint coated walls and that sort of thing in, in residential properties and
And that's
childcare
where
centers and high risk things. And so the intention is you want to get rid of that stuff quickly and not mess around with it. So fair enough. So that's kind of logically where you think it applies. What we deal with a lot is obviously contaminated land and soils. So my question was, well, does this extend to lead contaminated soils on a residential lot? That was my question, right? And I genuinely didn't know the answer just from kind of reading the guidelines at face value. And so I actually asked the EPA to clarify, and I went digging around. And before the EPA responded to me, I actually came across a presentation that was on, I don't think it was even on the EPA's website. It was on a third-party website where they'd given a presentation to an organization. I can't even recall who it was, but it was about a 20-slide presentation that actually clarified this exact question, and it did an awesome job at clarifying this, and it actually confirmed that lead contaminated soils in residential lots is pre-classified GSW, no matter how high the concentration is, which is unbelievably useful information for us and for our clients.
It is. And it was a nice presentation. Look, what we're trying to say is EPA, you can't just go out and give a presentation to some
To some
entity
group.
and clarify things that are without making this public. I have no problem that we go that you go out there and you explain it to people when they ask, but please make that publicly available.
For sure, because especially in that case, they've done the work. They've done the work to figure this out internally. What do we as the EPA think? So it's such a small step then to say, well, we're going to make this available to a broad audience, right? The hard bit's done. And the EPA did, they came back to me, soon after that and actually clarified exactly what I found in that presentation, which was great. So, again, but that was something that was I was able to find that publicly at least. I want to just go to a couple of examples of things that we've come across that aren't even public. So the first one I want to quickly mention is that recovered fines, our favorite topic, from the first pod, recovered fines. All those facilities back in that review that had asbestos detected in their fines, once everything was sorted out, they received a letter from the EPA. And the letter said, dear producer, thanks for going through all this process with us. Go forth and make recovered fines. But it also said, considering the findings of the review, we recommend that you carry out asbestos testing. And so that's great. And they directed that to the 12 or 14 facilities that they'd reviewed, right?
Recovered fines, you know what it is. I know what it
Yeah.
is. Recovered fines is the stuff that accumulates on the bottom of skip bins.
Skip bins,
Okay,
yeah.
so when you get skip bins into a skip bin facility, there's always stuff, fines that accumulate down there. The skip bin gets emptied, and the
Yeah.
stuff that is on the bottom gets processed, right? It gets, I mean, and it turns out to be whatever is in there, but it's this fine granular stuff. And these are called recovered fines, and they are dealt with a separate order, with the recovered fines order. And oddly enough, that order doesn't say anything about testing for asbestos in that material, which
That's right.
has, if you think about it, a very, very high likelihood or chance
Yeah.
of containing asbestos. So that we
Yeah.
have, just for the people who haven't listened to the first episode. So that's
Yeah.
what recovered fines are.
Well, that's it. And I get amending the order is a big ask, right? So I'm not even suggesting that the EPA at that point should have amended the order. That's another piece of work. But they went to the trouble of telling, 14 producers they recommend assessing for asbestos. And my question is, this is a general order, so anybody can produce recovered fines, right? I could produce recovered fines in my backyard if I wanted to. So where was the communication of that they expect asbestos testing to be done? Where was the communication of that to the broader audience who are producing fines? So again, they'd done the work, but they'd missed that opportunity to tell everyone they needed to tell. Another example that I just want to talk about, last one for the EPA. So we do a lot of impact assessment work and approvals work, and we keep coming across this issue where whenever we submit an application for a waste facility, we get the same line from the EPA, which is that it is the EPA's policy that waste facilities are enclosed, full stop. So regardless of what the quantitative assessment of that facility's impacts are, bottom line is it doesn't matter. It could be in the middle of nowhere with nobody around. It could have the best control equipment and emit no dust or whatever. It doesn't matter. Our policy is for it to be enclosed. And my
Is that
question to
written
the
down
UK
somewhere?
is always the same. Can you please direct me to the place where that is written down? They never can because it isn't written down anywhere.
And then it's not
It's not.
policy, then it's hearsay.
And that's how I would describe it. It is an internal position that the EPA has. But the fact that it's not been put out there in any kind of public policy, it has several issues. The first one is that it hasn't been tested publicly and it hasn't been put out there and people haven't had the opportunity to comment on it and have their say, right? The second, which is the bigger issue for me, is that we rely on information that the EPA puts out about their expectations in order to make decisions. And our clients rely on it to make investment decisions. So if that information is not out there, right, here's me, Mr. Waste Facility owner, thinking, great, I have a budget of X, and for that I can build this facility, and get it off the ground, right? And they say, sorry, we're not going to approve this until you build a shed. It throws the feasibility completely out, and that client has probably spent tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars on feasibility studies to get to that point, only to realize there is this major barrier that makes this project unviable. And they should have had the benefit of knowing that right at the beginning if it was such a clear thing. So that's a big sticking point for me. And I butt heads with the EPA a lot about it. I support the position, right? I'm happy with them saying we want all waste facilities enclosed. It's not the position that's the issue. It's the communication and the consistency around it.
Aside from the obvious costs involved in closing a facility, but look, I get it. If you've been on a, at a at a waste facility, they are not pretty places at all. They are terrible, terrible. They're dusty, insanely loud. Traffic. I've been on a lot of sites, but some of those waste facilities, they scare me. It's just heavy trucks running everywhere, excavators swinging around. Odors that you don't know what it is. It's not pretty. Enclose them, fantastic, great idea. But here it is, right? If you force all of them, new ones at least, to be enclosed, then please make that a policy so that people
Absolutely.
can plan for that. You can't just spring
Absolutely.
it on people. Oh, by the way, we think you should have spend another $1 million on a roof here or on an enclosure. That's the hope. I mean, it sounds
Absolutely.
rather simple,
Yeah,
one would
I think
think.
it's a great. I'm with you. I don't have an issue with the idea or with the principle of it. It's just about how it's done, and it just seems so simple to me. And I can't get my head around why it doesn't get done. So the last example that I just wanted to give, just to illustrate the point here, right, is there was a project that you and I worked on, Gunnar. It was a local government DA that we were putting in, but again, we obviously reviewed the contaminated land policy, and we did a site investigation, and then a RAP for the site. And the RAP involved a containment cell for asbestos. So our client must have spent, what, $70,000 on that assessment and the RAP all up.
For sure, for
A
sure. There was an
lot.
auditor involved as well,
And
so.
an auditor was involved who okayed those plans, and everything was looking good. We'd followed council's contam land policy. Everything was looking great. So we lodged the DA, and all of a sudden, council sends us a letter and says, no, sorry, we don't believe that this can be approved. This is not a permitted land use and so on, not consistent with our guidelines. And so we end up having a meeting with council, and they say, well, it's council's policy not to approve a containment cell unless it's part of a subdivision. And we look at each other and we shrug our shoulders and we say the same thing. Dear council member, please show us where in your contaminated land policy it says that, or where in your DCP it says that, or anywhere. And of course, the council internal policy. And the look on our faces and give ourselves a pat on the back for holding back in that meeting, because
Oh, I
the
didn't.
amount of money.
I did not. I
Well,
called
I still, I
to
think
the
you actually
Lord
did.
Mayor. He was present, and I said, "Your approval process is a clown show."
Well, what else could we say in that situation? I mean,
Well,
the amount of
nothing would
money
have
that had
been a
been
good one.
spent and time, it was just crazy to be sitting there and being told this is our policy, but it simply didn't exist anywhere. And so these are the types of things that we're talking about where There are decisions being made, there's work being done to come to positions, but it's just not being put out there in the public sphere, or it's being put out there in the public sphere and not communicated to anybody. It's a major, major problem. And we see it, the EPA is definitely an offender when it comes to this sort of thing, but that certainly others are as well.
I completely agree. I do remember the meeting very well, and my comment, and the
Yes.
Lord Mayor was obviously not used to that, to being spoken to like that. And
No,
you
and they
walked
couldn't
out of the
see.
meeting, and do you remember what you said to me?
No, I don't. Do you?
Yes, you looked at me. I said, Gunnar, I don't think I can take you to meetings like that anymore.
Well, it had to be said. It had to be said, though, for sure. And like the crazy thing is, they didn't even think that there was an issue.
Yeah, I know, and you know what? This has been this whole case now, and just 2 weeks ago we heard about the outcome because it went to all sorts of courts. I mean,
Yeah.
and our client was fully, completely, and utterly vindicated in, and it went into the millions of dollars. I
Absolutely.
was over the moon because of the incredible injustice that had happened in that particular. Now, what we
Yeah.
mentioned here was only a tiny
Yeah.
bit. There was a
Oh, yeah.
compulsory acquisition involved. It was a clown show. Doesn't make is not even the right word. This
Yes.
was disgraceful. Never mind.
That's something for
So
another
we
pod. The
that's
conflict
for
of
another
interest there was.
podcast. Yeah. So of course, please, when you make policies, make them public, make them written, and make them easily accessible.
Yes, in the one place, ideally.
And I don't know how this would work, but I have a feeling we have one layer of government too much, and I don't know which one needs to go. I have a feeling I don't know, the council layer is probably there is too many people with too much power and not enough accountability. I'm just throwing this out. Look, there are some fantastic people, and sometimes you come across someone who is just enjoying a lot of power, and you
Yeah.
don't have the resources to fight back. So, anyway, there's my two
I
cents.
mean, yeah, and I think that what we're talking about here, which is, the making of good public policy and the publication of it, right? It actually avoids conflict of interest, individual, discretion being applied in the wrong way. It actually avoids that sort of thing. Because when things are done in an ad hoc way, like in those examples we just spoke to, it creates an environment where things can be done inconsistently, right? And exactly on that council example, right, Gordon, you said they council went to court in this matter and lost. Of course they lost because when the judge asked them, where is your policy that says, that this isn't permitted, they didn't have one. They couldn't point to one. And so of course it was thrown out. So this is what I was talking about earlier when I said that it weakens the regulators if they don't have these things to fall back on. So there's no point coming to a meeting and saying, this is our policy, if you don't actually have that articulated publicly in a written way somewhere. And here's my suggestion to the EPA. Take a leaf out of the Department of Planning. Take a leaf out of their book. They have a page on their website where they have what's called planning circulars. And here's my suggestion to the EPA. Very simple. There's a new page on the EPA's website and it's called POEO Policy Statements. And under that, you have a sequential list and all these awesome clarifications we get all the time. Any little updates or, new definitions that might exist, the update to the venom definition, that sort of thing. It's such a simple system, and I have no idea why it can't be used in by other regulators. Include CLM Act, include the whole lot, right? But just
It's going to be a fine line to walk that you don't flood it with too much. But look, something along those lines would be just great. Would be great to have. All right. We have been recording way too long. I gotta so cut this baby down.
Definitely.
What else is there? I mean, I don't know if after this pod, if we have any listeners left. I don't know. I
Please, if you are listening, go on, grab us on LinkedIn or flick us an email. Just let us know. Back me up here. Tell me this wasn't the most boring pod you've ever heard in your entire life. Back me up here.
I'll send one.
Gunnar's looking at me with a very doubtful look on his face. So yeah. We'll see if we get any
Like,
messages.
to get in contact, bts@fourpillars.com.au. Is that what it is? It's in the show notes. All right, I did not fall asleep.
I'm
Good.
glad.
Yeah,
I'm glad.
so am I. How do I stop this? I don't know.